Soy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. I'm Trent and it is wonderful to have your company today for episode
85.
This week on Toy Power, we get into all the latest from PowerCon and break that down in terms of what we had offered from Super 7, Mattel and the Four Horsemen. And we'll round out this episode with latest scores. Going around the room in the Toy Power studio, we've got Frank.
Well, hoi hoi.
Darren.
Hello, everyone.
Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And a very, very special guest on the line, all the way from the beautiful, sunny San Diego, USA, Mr. Jose Gonzalez. Jose, welcome to Toy Power.
Thank you for having me. I'm really, really excited to be here today.
It is awesome to have you on, and what better way to talk to PowerCon than to have someone that was on the ground. And Jose, I take it you are somewhat of a convention buff. Can you just give our listeners a bit of a rundown on the sorts of conventions you get to each year?
Do we want to perhaps intro him to our viewers first? Some questions
we
for
could,
Jose?
Yep, we could do that.
Yeah. Like it says in the run sheet.
Like it says there. There's a bit of ad-libbing going on here. But all right, do you want to take us through the questions, Frank? Are you...
You normally do the questions.
You were the one that interrupted.
Okay.
All right.
Who is your favorite? You need to think of, put your 10-year-old hat on. You're sitting at home eating your cereal in the morning. Here's the first question: who is your favorite Australian?
Probably Paul Hogan, the Crocodile
Dundee. Yes! That's the correct answer.
Big thumbs up for that,
right? That's not an Aussie. This is an Aussie.
So as a 10-year-old Jose, what was the sort of toy, what toys did you collect, mate? What was in your 10-year-old toy box?
You know what? I had the great fortune of living about a block away from a Toys R Us in Van Nuys, California. So I would, almost on a daily basis, to the point that I was almost loitering at this place. my mom and dad would give me a couple dollars, and I would ride my bike down there, and I would be into anything in the main aisle. So we're talking G.I. Joe. I have specific memories about picking up G.I. Joe, specific memories about Muscle, Transformers, Inhumans. It was really cool living so close to a toy store, because I got to see a lot of these toy lines that didn't necessarily have a cartoon yet, or there was a lot of niche toy lines. So it was really fascinating to me visually seeing all these different toys, but for sure my mainstays were G.I. Joe, Transformers, Muscle and Mask.
Nice. Yeah. All good toy lines there, Jose. And again, as a 10-year-old, what was your favorite movie back in the day?
You know what? 10 years old. This is going to be 1987. Same deal with the Toys R Us. I grew up about a block away from this pizza place / video store. It was kind of a weird combination, but... I would go in there, and the lady who ran the place knew me by name, and she would just let me rent out anything. So I would go down there and have access to all these crazy movies. But in that year, I want to say I was a big Stallone fan, or I am a big Stallone fan. So we're talking like Over the Top. We're talking Cobra, yeah. Even though I shouldn't have been watching that stuff.
Yeah. 10 years old. 10 years old, yeah. Yeah.
You would get
some of my favorites: Harry and the Hendersons, Short Circuit, Flight of the Navigator, Howard the Duck, Three Amigos.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well done, man.
That's great. All right, now We are going to be talking about PowerCon for this reveal.
Just one more question. As a 10-year-old, a little birdie told me you've got a vast number of NES games, little birdie. So what was your favourite NES game? As a 10-year-old, what was the game you continued to come back to?
Early on, Mario Brothers. I mean, that's the original Mario Brothers 2. And then as I got older, there was this movie called The Wizard. Not sure if you guys have seen that.
Fred Savage.
An old Fred Savage movie, but I was completely mesmerized by that movie. It was the greatest thing I'd ever seen at the time. Introduced Super Mario Brothers 3. Ironically enough, just like my toy collecting, a lot of the reason I'm going back and collecting all these NES games is because the majority of them I didn't have as a kid. And so now that I'm an adult with disposable income, I'm going back and getting everything that I didn't have. So,
yeah, nice. Are you one of those people that times themselves how fast they can get
speed
through the
games?
I'm sorry, one more time?
Are you one of those people that times yourself how fast you can get through the game? Have you seen that?
No, I enjoy them. I enjoy the music. I enjoy the nostalgia. I enjoy the sound effects of the whole experience. It's just a joy for me to play, and it takes me back. So not I don't get too competitive. It's just more for the enjoyment.
Definitely, man. Well done. Nice one.
Yeah, I have a real soft spot for the NES as well. It was my very first console, so I hear.
Very good. All right, so we'll get into some convention news, and I thought a good way to warm our listeners up is to sort of run through your what it might look like in a given year in terms of the conventions you might attend, Jose.
Well, you know what? Again, being fortunate enough to live in Southern California, there are a number of conventions that take place here within driving distance. So I regularly attend the big one, San Diego Comic-Con. I've been going since 93. Every consecutive year I've been to it. I haven't missed one since then. I'm able to go to drive to PowerCon. I'm able to go to Long Beach Comic-Con. I'm able to go to Stan Lee's Comic-Con. And as well, there are a lot of smaller shows that aren't humongous shows, but they're shows nonetheless. There's a G.I. Joe one in Temecula. There's a NerdBotCon happening in Pasadena, not too distant future. And then for the first time this year, I actually flew out to Tennessee to attend the final JoeCon. I've never been to one. I'm a big G.I. Joe fan, so it was important to me to attend this final one. So I hopped on an airplane, flew out there, and it was a total blast. Went with a good buddy of mine. I hashtag con life.
Nice, man. Yeah. What's the one you look forward to each and every year? Aside from SDCC, what's the one that you just like ticks all the boxes for you?
You know what? It's got to be PowerCon.
Nice. Wow.
That's really cool.
That's a convenient segue, isn't it?
Have you been to the mall?
No. You know what? I just started. I kind of just discovered it about a couple years ago. So I've been to two so far. But I went last year and then I went this year. And I'm not sure why it hadn't caught my radar, but since I've been going, I've had an absolute blast. And ironically enough, a lot of my friends, local collector friends, actually go there as well. I have a buddy that has a booth there. So just going up there, being around that atmosphere, it's not a huge convention, so you have time to say hello to everybody. You have time to walk the aisles and see all that stuff and see familiar faces and as well as attend some pretty amazing panels.
Beautiful. Yeah, and I think that's probably the beauty of PowerCon is that it is a bit smaller and a bit more intimate. And the feedback that we sort of hear back here is that you can just talk. There's Mark Taylor. You can have some time with Mark Taylor and you know, there's Pixel Dan. You can go over and have a chat, and you can just chat to different people in the community. Whereas at a San Diego, you're probably not going to get on the stage and have a chin wag with Robert Downey Jr. or someone like that. So it's that sort of intimate feel that it gives.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at San Diego Comic Con, I have enough trouble keeping track of my kids. never mind anybody else.
So, Jose, since we heard you were coming on, I've been really wanting to ask you this question. As someone who got to PowerCon this year, we've been hearing here and obviously living vicariously through photos and anecdotal stories from people. What was the flavour like around the fact that they were celebrating the 35th anniversary of Filmation this year? Did it really feel that it was more Filmation driven than say last year's, or you know, just what was the difference, if any, that the theme made to the experience?
You know what? I think that the panels definitely lent themselves to the animation side. More so than last year. There was a lot more animators. There was a lot more people that worked on the show. As far as the exhibit floor, you know, the exhibit floor, it is what it is. It's people selling toys.
Yeah.
But even then, there were a lot of there was a few vendors selling animation cells and that type of thing. And some of the guests were related to the show via animation.
Nice.
Cool. Very good. Well, so there were some reveals, and we'll go through them now, maybe as well get a bit of a sense from you as to what the reaction on the ground was over there. But the first one was Super 7, and clearly we know, our listeners know, that Super 7 has picked up the Masters of the Universe license, and what they're doing in that space is they're doing their classics figures in that 6-inch super articulated style that they continue on from what Mattel was doing, but they're also getting into now in a big way the vintage 5.5-inch sort of reissue style of figures as well. So Super 7 showed off a couple of new figures, not a lot of stuff from this, but a Filmation style Teela and the robot He-Man from a singular Filmation episode.
Disappearing act,
yes. It was sort of an interesting choice of a variant. We know obviously they've got the buck to use on the He-Man, and this one seemed like a pretty good reuse. What was the feel over there, Jose, with those two reveals?
You know what? The Super 7 booth is, the both times that I've been there, is a focal point on the exhibit floor. A lot of people, a lot of fans. They have this glass case. But there was excitement. I mean, anytime you walk by there, it's hard to get it's hard to snap a picture of that case because it's always swimming with fans. From what I heard, there was a lot of that She-Ra caused a lot of excitement. Even though we had seen her before, you know, people were really excited over that figure. The 5.5er is a really interesting line. It's one of my favorites because I'm more of a vintage collector. So to me, it's a continuation of the vintage line. But there was certainly a lot of excitement around the He-Ra, around the Eldor, and the fact that we got to see it in package was pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, definitely. Was there any sort of feedback on how accurate those He-Ra and Eldor sculpts were to the original prototypes that were created back in the day?
So back from the 80s.
Back from the 80s, yeah.
I personally didn't hear any. You know, the fact that we saw them in package the first time, there's a lot of excitement. So I don't think I wasn't able to get online that day simply because I'm attending the events. But on the show floor, there was a lot of excitement about just the reveal itself. You know, I didn't hear personally. I didn't hear any complaints or feedback on them.
Yeah, and that was one thing we've always sort of debated here on Toy Power, is what direction they were going to go in with the packaging for He-Ra and Eldor. And it was one of I think Darren's points was to get out some figures on the red Rockburst card, because that is so iconic, and at least get them out and get them into people's hands.
And establish the relaunch.
Establish the relaunch, and I think they've done that really well, to now go into that Powers of Grayscale style of packaging. for me is brilliant, because that was where it was going to go.
That was where it left off.
Yeah, and interestingly, I don't know, Jose, if you know this little bit of trivia, but one of the mini, you probably do, but one of the mini comics, it's the Gwildor mini comic, and Darren's going to give me the name in a second.
The Cosmic Key.
Cosmic Key mini comic. I've got two copies of that mini comic, and one day I was fixing a shelf up in one of the bedrooms, and I looked down from this ladder, and I'm like, ah, why have I got part of the prototype box from the Powers of Grayscale toy line sitting on my desk? What is that? And I went down, and I'm like, okay, this is an image, a part image from that prototype box. I turned it over, and it was the back of the Cosmic Key mini comic. And then I'm like, okay, I've never noticed this before, that they've printed part of the box on the mini comic. Got out my other Cosmic Key, and it just had the regular cross cell of figures on the back.
Yeah, the three movie figures.
So clearly what Mattel were doing at the time is they were going to put in, say, the Cosmic Key mini comic into the Powers of Grayscale toys, but they were going to face it the back facing up, and that image would continue the box, right? So it'd be unbroken if you had the mini comic in there or not, with the way they did the print run. And I found that a really fascinating little insight into the fact that it already got a print run out using those graphics. So those graphics are actually out there in the public domain beyond what came up later on the internet.
It's fascinating because it would have changed the entire premise of the mini comics too. They would have become very much a lucky dip proposition. I can remember choosing figures in store.
Yep.
And you might say, for example, get Fisto or Clawful with multiple mini comics. And you'd always choose, if you'd pick Clawful, for example, you would choose the Clawful that came with the mini comic you didn't already have, rather than the other Clawful that had the mini comic that you've already got three copies of at home or whatever. So making it a lucky dip proposition would have been very interesting. It would have eliminated people like me that capacity to do that.
So are we saying Mattel started the trend of blind bagging? Is that right? That's kind of what this is sounding like.
They're saying they're on the cusp of doing it because they never launched exactly. Never quite eventuated.
But yeah, I guess seeing that... those are really, I guess, what fans have been clamoring for, is the continuation of the vintage line. And to see Hero and Eldor and to see him on the prototype packaging in all its glory, Hero came like on a, almost like a, you know, Thunder Punch or Terror Claw Skeletor, the slightly...
Very much that deluxe.
The deluxe. Yeah. Which was really cool. And I finally joined some dots in my head that I didn't know to this point, and it seemed so obvious when I saw that prototype, was that the Book of Living Spells... that sat on that burst. I was trying to work out, there was this sort of flash burst at the top of the card. I'm like, what is that for? That serves no purpose. Of course, that's to present where the book goes. Yeah. It goes on that spot. So that just was, finally, that mystery was solved.
Missing piece of the jigsaw.
Yeah. So we got the Super 7 figures. Mattel were also there, and it was interesting to sort of see the way that Mattel approached the con. In recent years, a lot of toy companies come to conventions, I guess, very prepared with prototypes or direction of where they're going. The sense I've sort of been getting from Mattel as of late, and this has been a trend from San Diego 2018 and now at PowerCon, where they're sort of represented by Brandon Sapinski, was very much... here's some stuff that we could do. Get on your phones, send us some hashtags and tell us what you think, and that might then turn into something more. Is that sort of the thrust of what Mattel was sort of offering at the con?
You know what, Mattel, it was interesting because Mattel wasn't in the main exhibit hall. They were out just outside the in this hallway, but they had a booth nonetheless. And it seemed like they were there to show off the, I guess, concept figures that they debuted at San Diego Comic-Con, the Slime Pit He-Man, the Anti-Eternia He-Man, as well as the Mega Construct figures. They had the Box Wing Raider and a Box 10-pack. But they were also selling what seemed like overstock. There were some older offerings, some older convention offerings that they were selling there. So Yeah, very interesting that they're kind of pushing the masters, like you said, via hashtag, seeing what fans want. And I actually went up to some of the Super 7 staff and I asked them, what their thoughts were on those prototype figures or concept figures. Whether it was stepping on any toes or any of that, and obviously they always aren't going to come out and tell me, but from what they told me, they hadn't really talked to Mattel. They had heard of them, and they thought they were interesting, but they hadn't connected with Mattel on any official capacity to kind of find out what they're doing. But if it gets us more masters, then hey, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's how the Classics line started, taking that prototype He-Man, putting it in the cabinet in 2007 and seeing what people thought. You can never write this off completely in that sense, I don't reckon.
But Darren, there were no hashtags involved. How did they do it without any hashtags?
Did they actually talk to people at the convention? You're sitting in PowerCon with probably the most dedicated fan base yeah. in the world in the one spot. I get
the impression they're trying to reach out to the people, not just the people that are at PowerCon, but the people that are sitting at home on their computers watching this stuff unfold.
Yeah, sure. I get that. But wouldn't that group almost represent?
Yes.
If you're sitting and watching it, I feel comfortable that Jose is representing my interest. Yeah. Right? He's not going on a totally different tangent. I want more, Star Trek merged with Masters figures, right? Like, he's pretty...
Hashtag.
Hashtag, I want variant Star Trek. He-Man and Skeletors to go with my variant Star Trek Turtles.
Yeah, it seems like Mattel don't... I don't know if it's market research or...
Or lack of...
I would have thought the numbers are pretty sort of shored up on Masters. We've had the .org for a number of years and they put out a lot of polls and you get a lot of interest. You've had Classics running for 10 years. You've got a lot of sales data. You're seeing what other companies are doing. Don't you think they sort of have enough?
They've got a convention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much does that speak for a brand that they've been able to build a convention? And what, 5 years now or something?
At least.
I think that's
a brand that, to be factor, is a brand that's had no new entertainment with the exception of comics for, since 2003.
Really. Mm. Yeah. There's no animation. There's no Turtles convention. There was a Transformers convention that sort of got shut down, I think, in the last sort of 12 months. And I think Hasbro now doing it under the banner of their HasCon, which is sort of everything under the Hasbro banner. Yeah. So, yeah, it's an interesting point. At a con that is specifically targeted to those Masters fans, is that their market research? It's hard to...
I'm confused. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if everyone sort of there was equally confused with Mattel's strategy at the moment, or if they're just putting the feelers out so that Brandon can take something to upper management to see if he can get it across the line.
They had some great stuff. I was particularly impressed with the jumbos. Obviously, I'm a fan of the jumbos, but seeing them revise the He-Man head sculpt to something more vintage, I thought was a really good move. And just seeing a jumbos. Prince Adam just brought back this flood of nostalgia for my sixth birthday in 1984 when I got that figure.
It was on a Wednesday.
It was a warm day.
It was my birthday. It was my birthday in June. True. It was raining. It would have been raining. They always rain. But the point is that was a figure I wanted, and my parents had to try and stop me from getting and all through South Australia and Victoria on a family holiday because they knew that this close friend of the family had it for me and that had it for me for a couple of months. They were absolutely wanted to give me that one for my birthday. And, my parents were dealing with, probably the greatest Masters Universe fanatic in the universe, wanting Prince Adam and seeing it in every town.
Yeah.
But, the flood of the sevens came right back and I want to buy that jumbo, damn it.
Yeah, the jumbos are interesting. I'd love the jumbos and I'd love to get another version of He-Man with the corrected head sculpt and to that point, if they're doing Prince Adam, well, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I'd have to then consider where I draw the line because it seemed like they were using every possible incarnation of the He-Man buck to put out.
There's some legitimacy in Faker, but
Faker's fine. No, but then and even Anti-Eternia. But
just before you go, what did we think of? Is it Zombie He-Man? Why not Slime Pit He-Man? Like, he's covered in green ooze, and they're calling him like Zombie or.
Oh, maybe that's the effect. The effect. I would have called him Slime Pit
He-Man. Yeah, I thought that was his name, Slime Pit.
No, no, no. The official name, if they go to production, I think is something else. Not Zombie He-Man or
it's
something.
The effect. It turns you into a zombie, essentially.
Slime Pit. Slime Pit.
Call a spade a spade.
He's covered in slime. That's
and
what
he's from
fans,
that mini comic. Yeah.
There must be someone else using a hashtag Slime Pit He-Man that Mattel can't use.
Hashtag not my Slime Pit He-Man.
Hasbro are using hashtag Slime Pit He-Man, so Mattel can't use it.
Don't be like that, Ben.
All right. Now, the other thing that happened, so as you might know, Mattel had the license for Thundercats for essentially a year, and they got partway through that year, and they only got 4 months' worth of figures out. Originally, they'd hoped to get six figures for the six monthly slots plus the Wile E. Kit, Wile E. Cat exclusive that they did, and the bonus figure that they did as part of the subscription exclusive, which was the mummified Mumra version. But because it got pushed back 2 months, there were two characters that were kind of further into production that basically never got released, and that was Groon the Destroyer and Jaga. So Mattel were back with those, and I don't know, from memory we'd never seen figures. So this was the first time we got glimpses of the Four Horsemen sculpts that they put out, and they looked wonderful. What was sort of the rationale for putting that out? Was it, again, Mattel trying to sort of get interest in whether they would continue Thundercats?
I personally, there was a lot of confusion, I want to say, around those, because I remember when people started seeing those, when people started putting pictures up of those figures, it was that's great, that's awesome, but kind of why are they there, to what end, or what was the purpose? And I think they were trying to take a page out of the Horseman's playbook and just put it in the case and see what happens. They were great to see, but there was a lot. Yeah, there was a lot of how do I get those? Is that is the line back? Is the line not back? How is this gonna work? Why are those there? So, but there was excitement nonetheless when people. I know when I walked up to the case that they were in, there was a lot of oohs and ahs around the figures. So, not really sure when I would swing by Mattel, there wasn't, unfortunately, I didn't catch any Mattel brass for me to ask. It was mostly just people, vendors and kind of people manning the booth and just, you know, just walking around and asking or answering general questions.
Was there any why are they showing Thundercats off at PowerCon kind of thoughts? Because that's something that I've been wrestling with probably since they came out. It's cool to see them, and I'd love to see them get made, and sort of love to see Mattel round out the line, actually. But, you know, this is a Master Universe convention, not a Thundercats convention.
Know your audience. Know your audience, people.
Yeah, I'm left feeling they were very off topic.
and that's where I think the confusion came from, is because, you know, you have all this, like you said, we're at a Masters convention, and then lo and behold, there are these two Thundercats, and there was no fanfare when they were, I guess, put out. There was no announcement. I mean, they were just there, and people were like, whoa, what is this? There was a lot, like I said, just confusion around the figures, and I didn't see any Mattel press release or any announcement that to what end those figures were in there, you know, other than to, hey, check them out. Here's what could have been. Here's what you
there's
could have
not
had.
Much other than that I've seen, other than the walkthrough of Pixel Dan.
Yeah. So, Jose, we know you're a big Masters fan, but what do you rate yourself on a Thundercats fan? Like, you know, is this something you get excited for, or you're just as confused as us, or what? Where do you sit?
You know what? I personally, I didn't buy into the Maddie, the modern figure, so. For me, they were great to see. For, you know, obviously, I follow the industry, so I know there's a lot of excitement around those, and there was a lot of disappointment as well because we never got those figures. So to me, it was great seeing the figures there. Aesthetically, they look great. Obviously, they were prototypes. But yeah, it was a little bonus, you know. Here's all this Master stuff, but hey, here's this two Thundercats figures.
Yeah. What about from a vintage point of view? Do you have many Thundercats in your collection? That's what I was sort of going
through. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, that cartoon has one of, if not the greatest intros.
Yep.
Ever.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was a big fan of the Thundercats / Silverhawks /
Tiger Sharks.
What's the name? Tiger Sharks. Yeah. Yes. Yes, and I remember having Tiger Sharks as a kid.
You never see them over here. Man. They're so obscure.
I got a
Ben's got one.
Ray, I can't even remember his name. The villain, the main head villain. And plain Jane, like no accessories whatsoever, and it cost me a lot of coin just to get from the US to here. So, but he just looks so cool.
Yeah. They're great looking figures.
Man Ray or something. His name is
Manta Ray.
Manta Ray. Yep. Yep.
The I've got a mate, listener, shout out to Trent Barrett, over in WA, who's going back and getting into Silverhawks at the moment, and he shot me a complete mint on card, mint in box lot that was going on eBay. It was an immaculate lot, had all the vehicles, all the figures. The starting bid was $8,000 US.
Oof.
And the buy it now price was $12,000 US.
Wow.
So between us, we didn't quite have that money, but
let me go check my car. I might have some coins.
Yeah, I'll just sell my car, yeah. And then I can buy.
Make sure and check the couch for
loose change. Yeah.
Exactly. That's very good. So yeah, look, I mean, if there was any confusion, and it sounds like there was a lot of confusion on Thundercats by attendees at PowerCon. Equally, the Four Horsemen seemed very confused when they did their Instagram post the next day and basically said, well, Mattel showed you pictures of this, so I guess there's nothing stopping us from putting up some pictures now. And they put up their studio shots that they'd done of the prototypes. And they said, yep, we don't really know what's happening either.
We'll wait to see what Mattel say.
We'll
maybe. Which is ironic because Mattel are now waiting for everybody else. # tell Mattel.
Because then there's that question. So Four Horsemen are working for themselves, obviously for Mythic Legions, and they're working for Super 7 sculpting the Masters of the Universe. So then does Mattel rehire the Four Horsemen to say, can you come back and...
They do. They're contractors.
They're
contractors and they are working on DC. So DC Multiverse. So they're essentially contracted by Mattel. So I don't think it would be hard to re-engage the Horsemen to continue Thundercats. There'd been a question on licensing that everyone was sort of saying to Super 7, can you pick up the license? Please pick up the license and continue Thundercats. And obviously that fell through.
Well, Brian Flynn always said, and I remember, to Pixel Dan, that it had to go through a couple of bureaucracies, and one of which was Mattel had to hand the license back to Warner Bros. I guess we're now led to assume that perhaps it was never even handed back.
It wasn't. Well, I wouldn't have thought they'd be putting out those figures if they couldn't continue the line. So either they...
Super 7 never had a chance
I think that's correct.
Mattel were never going to give it up.
But I thought, going back a step, I thought that once those Funko Savage World figures had come out, I thought, well, that's where the license ends with us. But I think you can break that license down into two components. One is in the 5.5-inch scale, and one is in the 7-inch scale. And they are, I guess, under licensing, they would fall under two different categories. So clearly, Mattel still has that 6 or 7-inch super articulated based on the cartoon likeness.
How would they distribute them? That's the next question.
Yeah, look, I guess this is we're probably at the point, if you go back to 2007 Comic Con or 2008.
Distribute them through hashtags.
I think I know what hashtag I'm going to title this episode.
It's going to have the word hashtag in it.
Yeah, pretty much.
But you're pretty much at the point where Mattel was when they put that He-Man back in the case and just said, here it is. It's an inception thought, and they're trying to gauge reaction. So I think that's probably all we can... Look, it's better than no news, right?
Absolutely.
It's better than having nothing.
Oh, for sure.
Very good. All right. Now, were there any other notable parts of the con and getting around and chatting to people over there, Jose? Did you manage to catch the James Etok screening of Return of Faker?
No, unfortunately not. And that's, I was there for one day. Once the exhibit floor closed, we had to get run back home, take care of family stuff. But unfortunately, no, I didn't see it. To be honest, highlights were the panels. The Super 7 panel was great. The Mattel panel was great. The retrospective on the 200X was pretty awesome. So yeah, we got there in the morning, walked around the exhibit floor, picked up a few things, did some bin diving for some vintage figures.
Hit up
Super 7, which had a tremendous line for everybody was clamoring for that anti-Eternia carded figure. As well as the Mexican knockoff figures in their reaction line. The Four Horsemen had a humongous line. Those two exclusive figures were a big hit from just gauging obviously by the line. And then we went into the panels and pretty much stayed there the rest of the day. Each one was a real treat to be able to take a snapshot into the filmation history of He-Man, and then go forward into the future with the Super 7 panel and see what they've got, where their head's at and what they have plans, and have them address some of the quality issues, some of the shipping issues. The one thing I took away from that Super 7 panel is that they don't want to get ahead of themselves going forward. So they're not going to be so quick to debut prototypes until they're further down the production stages, and so that they're trying to minimize the window between pre-order and delivery. But it was interesting to see all the subjects being covered. It was great to see some of the guests that were up there, some of the going into behind the scenes at Filmation, and them talking about their day-to-day animation process, and talking about Lou Scheimer, and it was really, really great stuff.
All right, does anyone have anything else?
What about Mythic Legions? You touched on that, so the Four Horsemen, but was there anything new to see at the Mythic Legions? I think they had the 2.0 on.
Yeah, they've got a new line called Soul Spiller, which they debuted at their sort of online convention, I guess, that they streamed across Facebook and Instagram. And two of the figures out of that, as Jose mentioned, were Kalros, which is basically a humanoid battle cat. And I can't think of the name, but basically an evil Lynn.
Milena?
Milena. So yeah. I don't know, Jose, there was nothing sort of else. It was just mainly selling those two exclusive figures at PowerCon.
They had a few prototypes up, and after the panels, we actually walked around the exhibit floor one last time before we left on Saturday, and there, I believe it was Cornboy who had, he was playing with this prototype of this horse.
The fire horse?
Yeah, fire horse. Yep. Yeah, so then there was a big crowd around him. So that was, I didn't get too many details because it was a big crowd in front of him, but such a cool looking piece, man. The details on that thing were bananas.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
Yeah, that was the reveal that they did online. I was watching it live at the time. I think Lux Toy Collector was also on there having a look, and it was, when that thing came out, you could just see the reactions of people popping up on the screen. It was insane. Yeah. But they, as you would expect, they are producing some very high quality toys. I think we're getting obviously very close. I ordered into the Mythic Legions 2.0, which consisted of about 40 odd figures, and that is getting very close to arriving in their distribution center to kind of on send. So that's sort of probably going to be the next big event as those figures start to come out, and some beautiful photos will emerge, I imagine, as everyone sort of takes their photograph.
So, Jose, paint us a picture on the, when you're on the con floor, you're walking through the vendors and stuff. What are the holy grail items you're seeing on hand? Obviously, this
Was there a certain two-pack?
Yeah, this is a PowerCon. They've got, you know, the greatest of the great masters of the universe. Hopefully, products on sale. What caught your eye there that you want to share with us? Possibly that we just would only dream about.
You know what? For me personally, a grail would obviously be Eternia, and nice. There was a few vendors who had like an Eternia mint in box.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and just seeing that box art, it was pretty crazy. But other highlights were there was a lot of international package samples from Germany, really rare variants. But other than that, you know, there was a lot of fan interpretations of masters, and it's just a testament to the fandom. A lot of the vendors there were, you know, showing art and showing their customs and showing, you know, everything in between. And so it's really great to see the fandom express their love for He-Man in those ways, and then you get to go to PowerCon and talk to them and see them in person and get their, you know, share within that fandom. For me personally, I heard through you guys about that Masters of the Universe documentary that was on Netflix. Yeah. I hadn't heard about it, and I was really bummed that I missed out on the Kickstarter. But I went there, and the director happened to be there, and he had the Kickstarter copy, so I was able to chat with him and pick that up. So now that, you know, that having that is a grail within itself for me. But
yeah,
definitely some great stuff to look at.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What was the price on Eternia box? Just a snapshot for the records.
I didn't even ask.
you would have had to drive. You would have had to drive home in a different car.
Uber.
Yeah.
I would have had to walk home because yeah.
Walk home and then sleep out in the shed for the next month or so.
Absolutely.
Sleep out in the shed.
Yeah, Darren's, box, right? Darren's getting the mattress, moving it to the shed right now so he can buy one.
I'd do it for a year. Quite happy.
Yeah, you could just set up the playset and then just sleep in the box.
It wouldn't be in the box then, but yeah, good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's been great talking to you about PowerCon, Jose, I guess I was wondering how much did you see of the people organising it, but you know, behind the scenes, you know, your Val Staples, your Danielle Galuta, you know, people that were actually working the con. Did you see much of them around the place?
You know what? No, I didn't. I didn't see Val. And obviously they're running around.
Yeah, that was,
you know,
what I was
just behind the scenes. But no, I didn't see Val. The only place that I did see some of the Masters of the Universe notables were if they were moderating a panel or if they happened to be a guest at the panel. But yeah, as you can imagine, it's a little bit hectic for them running back and forth and making sure everything goes off without a hitch.
Absolutely. I wouldn't normally ask, but just hearing from yourself and from others that it's a smaller, more intimate con than some of the others, I just thought that might have been something that you might have just noticed them running around.
I suspect there are times in the evening that maybe they're more available.
Yeah.
Because obviously it goes all weekend and there might be people arriving early and catch-ups and that sort of thing. So probably they're... During the actual running of the formal part of the event, they would be flat out. But I'm sure if you made the trip over there, you'd definitely get a catch-up with Val, I'm sure.
You know what? I actually did see him twice, but literally both times he was running.
That's notable.
I was walking. I think I went out to drop some stuff off of my car, and I was walking back to the exhibit floor, and he just beelined right by me, and obviously he was a man on a mission, so I wasn't going to stop and say, hey, but very, very busy.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome.
Very good. Well, that's been awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that experience, Jose. And on that note, we will move to our next segment.
Whoa, dude, nice score.
It is latest scores, and well, we have to say a very, very special shout out to you, Jose, for coordinating what is one of probably the biggest shipments that we've received here on Toy Power. We've got half of that, so half the boxes have arrived. And what we got in that was the San Diego Comic-Con goodness, which was, and I don't know how you pulled this off, but you got us each a set of the NECA turtles in the VHS packaging. So that arrived, and I brought that to Frank's place tonight and handed out the goodies, and everyone was pretty excited about that.
It was so, like Santa, but he had curly hair. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Let's just say, Jose, you are now family.
I was ecstatic. Like, so excited to get my hands finally on these set, and so cool, so iconic, just amazing.
So thank you, Jose, officially from us here. You really went above and beyond, and we are so happy.
You certainly did. Thank you so much. And if I could nominate you for sainthood, I would.
My pleasure, gentlemen. My pleasure.
Very good. Well, we might start off with you, Frank, and we'll just head around the room, and then when we get to Ben, we'll shoot over to Jose. What have you picked up in the last couple of weeks?
Well, along with those turtles from Jose, I also got a couple of Marvel Legends, the vintage style Captain America and Iron Man, looking very circa 1960s from the comic books.
This is in the sort of the Toy Biz repro packaging.
Yeah, that's right. They've got the blue stripe at the top with the yellow stars and some great sort of vintage artwork on the left-hand side. Look, as has been well publicised, I'm an open all the boxes kind of guy, but I'm looking at these going, I'm really tempted just to keep them as is because they look absolutely gorgeous there. Look, overall, I've been fairly quiet as far as picking up other stuff. One thing that has kept me busy in the toy room is I'm looking over at about 3 to 4 shelves worth of vintage Playmates Star Trek figures. These are not actually, these do not belong to me. These are on loan to the museum from the Trent Estate. In a sort of very small attempt to help him clean up his toy room so it could actually
he can walk in there.
Yeah, get more than 2 feet inside the door.
It's
so,
like getting a bucket, dipping it into the ocean and going, well, I'm done.
I think you were saying earlier tonight, Frank, he's already filled that space.
Yeah, exactly. I've had these figures for not even a fortnight, and he's like, oh, that space is taken by something else now. But no, look, apart from as far as actually picking up a lot of stuff, I think Ben also got me another Marvel Legends, the Groot, little baby Groot and Rocket from the Guardians 2 line, which gives me another piece of the Mantis Builder figure. So she now has a body to attach whatever limbs I've got of her, which is still a couple short. So thank you very much to Ben for that. I think that's about it. It's been a bit of a quiet month for me, to be honest. Darren, what about yourself?
So I got the Los Amos Super 7 unboxing exclusives that Super 7 sold on their site for He-Man and Skeletor. For about a minute they were up there. I happened to be fortunate enough to be awake and online at the right minute and got them. So they arrived and looked really, really cool. Beautifully packaged in terms of the packaging design, but also beautifully packaged, and they arrived completely mint.
Nice.
Straight. Case fresh. Absolutely stunning examples. So really, really, really happy with them. Also had a couple of books come my way, including a Turtles book that shows you quite a bit of the vintage line and some vintage merchandise. I'll have to see if I can take some photos of it. I think, you know, people might be interested to see what that looks like. And what else did I get? The Blu-ray from the definitive Powers of Grayscale, the definitive He-Man and Master Universe documentary, which I'm really, really happy to have. And also got a DC Universe multiverse Wonder Woman figure, thanks to our good friend Jose. I've just forgotten the name of the character, but I know who I meant.
Wait, Darren forgot something. Can we know this in our calendars?
Hasn't that had it long enough to build it, ingrain
in memory
it,
banks,
to indoctrinate myself.
Or something. Some Greek.
Yeah, and I also got sounding. The Super 7 Master some Universe Greek Classic Stridle.
Nice.
Thanks, man. To Trent.
Yeah.
I have to have a look at that before we go.
Well, look. I did. So this was quite an interesting one. I, because Mattel put out a Night Stalker, and now Super 7 have essentially used the same mold to put out their Stridor. So this is, I guess, the best comparison you're going to have between what Mattel are doing and what Super 7 are doing. Apples for apples, right? I know you can sort of compare figures and that sort of thing and make judgment calls, but this was a really good example of where you could line them up and see how they done it and produced it. And for me, I couldn't tell them apart. The Stridor was of the same quality as the Night Stalker in every way that I could see. So
rumor has it, it was made in the Mattel,
factory.
Factories.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, okay. So that might explain it because, yeah, it was...
It's good quality.
It was, well, no, I'm not trying to denigrate some of the other figures, but it was. I was surprised because I would have cut them a bit of slack, right? I would have said, look, I'm happy for this to be 10% lower quality, and I'll still be happy. But I was quite surprised to see that it was of equal quality, and that might explain why. Yeah.
That makes me really happy because Stridor was one I have a soft spot for. Nostalgically, got it for Christmas from Father Christmas in 1984. And, you know, put it on the list after my, writing my letter to Father Christmas or Santa after my year one teacher told me, don't ask for Buzz Off, because that was the one I was going to ask for, because he'll think you're telling him to buzz off. So somehow Father Christmas knew that, and I got Stridor and Buzz Off. I still don't know how that worked, but remarkable.
Nice. If you guys recall a few episodes ago, I had a lot of trouble getting my Metal Mutant Shredder, and yes. It never rocked up in the mail, so I had to file an eBay claim, and I ended up getting another Shredder, which was awesome. Well, fast forward a few months, and I was found another Metal Mutant Shredder online. Very nice quality. It still had the card back as well, so I picked up Metal Mutant Shredder with Tiger Spirit armor from circa 1995, I believe.
Yeah, it's about right.
So that's a fantastic figure. So cool. I think I paid $25 USD for it. I won the bid and $35 shipping. Yep. So that was just amazing. Booyah. And then, of course, what else did I get? I got the She-Ra and Hordak 2-pack from Darren. Was able to shoot that towards my way tonight, which was freaking awesome. I can't wait to put them in my vintage collection.
So, I'm just happy to get it to you, my friend. Man, I hope you're happy with it, man. Yeah.
And I know we've already talked about it before, but finally getting the NECA, you know, movie turtles, unfortunately couldn't afford the quarter scale figures. I don't have room in my collection for the quarter scale figures, so these 6-inch ones are just the, you know, the first representation of the movie ones. Aside from the vintage ones, I was so excited last night. I even cleared a shelf on my in my toy room ready for them to rock tomorrow. So when I
Jose was under a lot of pressure to, you know, pack everything up and send it over, but I was under enough pressure to remember to bring him tonight. I would have been lynched by you guys if I hadn't, wouldn't I?
Damn straight.
Frank and I actually joked about it. I was here before Ben and Trent tonight.
We would have sent you back.
And if he won't go back, he'll be in the sin bin.
Trent's missing from this episode because he's gone back to his house, which is a half hour away.
We'll be saying, sorry, Jose, Trent won't be on tonight. Frank's muted his microphone. But no,
listening to the episodes, every time you guys would mention the turtles, it was like, oh man, I gotta get these out.
We weren't trying to drop any subtle hints, but I will say this, just on the Trent note, I said to Frank, don't worry, he would have packed that car at 2 PM. He needs the space in the toy room.
Also true.
Yeah, very good. Over to you, Jose, if you've got anything you want to shout out in terms of stuff you've picked up recently.
You know what? I'm mainly a vintage collector, but I did pick up the Mezco Wonder Woman, and that's a pretty nifty little figure, continuing that line. But then I had the PowerCon haul. I picked up the exclusive muscle slime can. Picked that for myself. I also picked up, diving in bins, I finally picked up a shield for my Extendar. I didn't have that, so that was pretty exciting. Yeah. I also picked up a Beast Man, a complete Modulok, And other than that, I picked up about 12 NES games to add to the collection. So I think I'm up to 200 or, what is it, 329 now? So that's...
Wow.
Wicked. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Just out of interest, if you were to collect them all, what sort of number are you looking at? Is it in the thousands?
No. The official U.S. release, I believe, is 678.
We're almost halfway there.
I'm almost halfway there.
Do you even find time to play? Like, you've just picked up seven in one fell swoop. Will you ever play those seven? Or do you think they'll just, yep, I've got them in my collection. We can tick that box.
No, you know what I do is when I acquire like seven, ten at a time or whatever the case may be, I go through this ritual that I get them, I clean them thoroughly, I open them up, make sure the board is correct and clean, and then I test them. And the test just happens to take 2 hours or so.
So my family
will walk in here and I'm, you know, full throttle playing Hudson Hawk or Sesame Street or some, yeah, some weird, obscure title, but fun nonetheless.
So of the seven that you picked up recently, what's the standout? What's the one that you just like, that is, what a cool game? Don't say Sesame Street.
one of the titles that was in there that really exciting to me was Castlevania 3.
Oh, nice.
And it's a rare game. It's you know not one of the common ones. I was really happy to get that one and scratch that off my list. Really cool game.
Nice. On the video game front, I just realized this, when we're talking about later scores, I also got the Spider-Man game for PS4, the new one that's just come out, digital download, so it was basically waiting for me on my PlayStation at 11:30 last night, and I was playing it by 11:32. Fantastic game. Like, it's definitely a AAA title, lots of polish to it. Do you know what? I'm like two steps into the story mode because I'm just swinging around New York having fun. Like, it is just insane. They've got the physics right. A lot of Spider-Man games over the journey get the web slinging side of things wrong and it ruins the whole experience. This is something else. Like, you can just zip line and I still struggle chasing cars. Like, there's missions where you know, there's someone stolen a car because I don't really have a good sense of direction anyway in real life, let alone when I'm Spider-Man swinging through the streets of New York. So yeah, sorry, I just thought I'd shout that one out.
Yeah, nice. That sounds like a good game. Just quickly from me, again, thanks to Jose on San Diego Comic-Con, managed to snag the Mortal Kombat Ermac exclusive. So that is on loan to the Frank Museum to go with the Mortal Kombat collection. So Frank does a very good job at displaying those. I've run out of room to display loose stuff, so that'll be great every time I come over here to check that out. The Shearer and Hordak 2-pack as well, thanks Jose from San Diego, the Super 7 store that came on the beautiful pink packaging.
That was from Darren, wasn't it?
No.
Oh, the reaction. Sorry, I'm giving you the wrong one.
Yeah, and again, yes, and the same one, but in the vintage style from Darren. So thank you, Darren, for ordering that. That 2-pack is a beautiful box, and I don't have any representation of a 2-pack like that in my collection. So nice to get the Hordak and Shearer in there. I won't open it up. I'll wait for the single card releases.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the single card for the same reason.
Open that one up. The other bits of stuff that had been happening was I had a very nice find at a local toy store here in Adelaide where they were clearancing some of the Black Series for a very good price, $10 Australian, and picked up a few figures that I didn't have and got a few army builders and a few to open as well. So that was very good. And
Trent also helped me out too. I meant to mention that when I did my round, I've just had so much luck lately, I guess, that I forgot, so apologies, Trent.
No.
But yeah, no, fantastic value, and thanks for helping me out, man.
No, they were good, and this was the first time I've opened one up that I think has the face print technology. I opened up the Ray with the poncho, so yeah, from the island, and the face on that is just sensational. Yeah. It's a beautiful representation of Daisy Ridley, so very, very impressed in the, with what they're doing with the face print. And it actually, if you hold it up against one of the older figures, you can see how far they've come.
Definitely.
So it is an amazing journey, and happy to continue sort of on the Black Series road.
And $10 for the face print technology, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd second that. Just to jump in with the face print technology stuff, I've got now, with in completing one of the waves, I've got two versions of Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
And they are, I had a close look at the buck and the sculpting, and it's the same. There's a little bit of different paint here and there, but one is pre face print technology and the other one is just Elizabeth Olsen. And even my wife sort of had them side by side. I said, look, which, I feel silly having both of these on display, which one? And she just goes, look at this one, that looks like the on screen character, that's the one you're going to display. So yeah, amazing,
beautiful.
There's some legitimacy in both though, I reckon, if you wanted to contrast them, Frank, because one is,
come on Darren, Olsen. You got to make a decision at some point.
One's Elizabeth Olsen and the other one's an artistic interpretation from a toy sculptor.
Yeah.
Toyetic version of it.
Toyetic version.
Yeah, that's it.
Fair enough.
There's always room for two or more.
There is.
That's it.
So, Jose, before we sign off, where can people find you? What are you doing? You know, what's your hashtag on Instagram, etc., etc.?
You know what? I'm mainly active on Instagram, and you can find me at Vintage Scoundrel. More than personal stuff, I put, you know, stuff I find at the flea markets, mostly vintage, some new stuff. But I love sharing and connecting with fandom. So that's where you can find me at.
Fantastic.
Absolutely Jose. Wonderful. And an absolute pleasure to finally have you on, Jose. Massive shout out, because, you know, doing a podcast can be a bit of a, you're putting stuff out there, but you're not getting a lot of stuff back. And you were the first one to sort of reach out, write us a nice review and get in touch, and our first patron as well. We were absolutely blown away that someone would sort of put money behind the show. So just that gesture is just meant so much to us, and your support. So it meant the world to us to have you on the show. And it was really great chatting with you, and we hope to get you back on sometime in the future.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I from the get-go, I absolutely love the podcast. I love the interaction between you guys. I love that you guys are gentlemen and there's a lot of constructive criticism. You know, I always think that if I was to put together a podcast, it'd be just like yours. I mean, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So you guys are awesome. You guys knock it out of the park every single week, and I really appreciate you guys just offering an hour of toy talk and entertainment. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Jose. That means the world to, I think, everyone in this room. It really does. I mean, when I was so excited when I heard you were going to be on, because obviously this is part two of a conversation we really started with Danielle Galerto about PowerCon from the inside. Now to hear the experience from someone on the, you know, that actually went, I feel we're the lucky ones, but for you to say that, I mean, you know, that just tops the whole night off for me.
Lovely. Well said. Thank you so much. And on that note, we will wrap this episode of Toy Power. Special shout out to all our patrons, John Caulfield, aka Lux Toy Collector, Jose, who we've just had the pleasure of chatting with, Chris Wisdom, Brett G, and Joe Hayes. We will see you around the toy aisles.
Thank you, one and all, and until next time, good journey.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/Toy Power Podcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but yeah.